Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the third class in our Kabbalah for Tarot Readers telecourse. We have an awful lot to cover tonight, and that's nothing unusual in telecourses, but I'm going to skip the review that I normally do to begin with, and if you hear stuff that you know that you've heard before, but you can't remember what it means, make a note of it, and then you can look it up later on your own. There's bound to be some of that, but I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at how much of this material you've already become comfortable with and how much of it is familiar territory. Before we actually do begin, does anybody have any questions at all from earlier times?
You just told us not to ask any questions.
Did I tell you not to? No, I didn't. I said I wasn't going to do a review, but if you do have anything that I can clear up quickly, I will do it now. No? Okay. So with that little two-second silence, I'll take that for nobody has any questions. In Kabbalah, there are a few important numbers that contain mysteries. And these mysteries are essential to understanding what we're doing. They're the doorways to the heart of our study. And those very same numbers serve the exact same function in tarot. And these numbers, many of you won't be surprised to hear, are the numbers 4 and 10 and 22. How many of you have come across those numbers before and have some idea of where we're going with this? Anybody? Some of you have taken the Tarot School Correspondence course, and that's the very first thing we talk about in the very first page of Lesson 1, which is very funny. So anyway, we're going to do a bit more of that tonight, and you'll see how all of this ties in. In Lessons 1 and 2 of this course that we did last couple of weeks, we began to see the invisible process and the structure of creation begin to unfold as the number 10, which were the 10 positions of the Tree of Life that we call the Sephirot. And in its unfolding, the mysteries of the number 10 begin to show how the indescribable, with quotation marks around it, becomes incarnate, becomes embodied. And we learn that the Sephirot of Kabbalah are the same as the numbers of the minor arcana of Tarot. And that comes as a surprise to some people when they first hear it. It will become less and less of a surprise as you find that the collaboration, the cooperation, the connection, the equivalence between Tarot and Kabbalah is totally remarkable. The fit is as tight as a glove. But even with the unfolding of that mystery of 10, the universe, which it describes, hasn't become real yet, not what we usually call real. There are two more extraordinary processes that have to occur. The first of these is contained in the number 4, and the second in the number 22. And tonight, right now, we're going to begin to unfold the mysteries of 4. And I say begin because this entire course from start to finish is just a very short introduction from a very specialized point of view to a study that can and should take a lifetime, and for many people does. So I'd like to go back to the beginning, which, as you remember, or perhaps you don't, is the empty whiteness of the field of potential that we represent as a sheet of paper before anything is written on it. You remember that stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, last week, we saw 10 Sephirot arise from that fertile blankness and proceed to do all sorts of conceptual gymnastics. But how and why did the 10 circles organize themselves in precisely that form? Why did they show up as the structure of the Tree of Life, and why do these numbers look like circles? We asked a lot of questions last week, and now we're asking a couple of more. You can't take anything for granted here. Is this arrangement of circles accidental? Is it just a convention of design? I mean, I ask these as a kind of rhetorical question, because I'm sure that if I asked you it as a real question, you would know that I was going to, that the answer to these questions is no. It's not accidental. It's not a convention of design. Could the circles have been squares or triangles just as well? Could the Tree of Life have looked like something else instead of what it does? Well, actually, yes. It could. And actually, no, it couldn't. As usual, there are two answers to everything, and they're opposites. Yes, because there have, in fact, been several designs for the Tree of Life in its history. And the Sephirot are concepts and words of power and planets and metals and alchemy, and there are other things as well, and each of these is part of a language of its own, and each one of these languages has its own visual imagery. So the Sephirot could conceivably have looked like other things. But the answer is also no. It couldn't be other than it is. Within its own frame of reference, the one we're working with here, The circles and their arrangements that make the Tree of Life are powerfully organic. They spring naturally from the mysteries of the second important number in our study, which is the number 4, and that's why we're going to be talking about it this evening. There's a story I started to tell you before that I never finished, and that is that the indescribable ocean of consciousness, which didn't even exist, had the thought, let me become many. And the whole universe arose from that thought. But that was just the first sentence of a story, and I'll continue at a little bit of a distance, and you'll see where we go. The story continues that the indescribable created everything by means of uttering its own name, one letter at a time. This name, which you probably know as the Tetragrammaton, had 4 letters, and each letter was uttered with a breath. And the curtain of the indescribable was pierced with the uttering of the first letter. And the utterance was a breath. And we represent this breath by the perfect form of a circle, which is the shape of limitless expansion of energy arising from a point. This circle that just showed up from this breath had no limit, no, at least of the kind that we're aware of, because neither time nor space nor any description had been created yet. But it was a soundless sound. It contained everything within itself, and it was, all by itself, the whole of everything there was. And remember that this sound was the first letter of the name from which everything was about to be made. But it was just the first letter. The intention that brought this utterance, this letter sound, this sigh, this breath to pass, went to the very edge of the circle that it created, to the end of the only universe there was, to the bottom of the rim of the circle of the first breath. And there, it uttered the second letter of the name. So, the bottom of the rim of the first circle, which was the first breath, became the location of the center of the second breath. And this expanded like the first one in the form of a circle. So the second letter of the name became, in its turn, a limitless universe, and it contained all there was a second time, in a way that was exactly the same but completely unlike the first one. It's funny how contradictions are sometimes the only way that you can express the nature of the truth. The third letter also became a breath, and it was uttered at the bottom of the rim of the second universe. And the fourth letter likewise was uttered at the bottom of the rim of the third universe. And so you had 4 circles, each one beginning at the bottom of the one before it. Each in turn was all there was. Each one overlapped the others, and each was a letter uttered as a breath, which became a circle that was the whole universe. And each universe was exactly the same, and it was also completely different from all the others. Now, when all 4 letters had been uttered, all the breaths breathed, all the circles expanded and linked, and all the worlds created, the numbers 10 and 22 came into being, and I'm going to show you how that happens later on this evening. The Tree of Life was created and completed, and what we call the real world sprang into view, just as though it was born out of nowhere. No part of the process that created it could be found anywhere. By the time the real world showed up, everything that made it had disappeared. It was just as self-existent as the indescribable will that created it in the beginning. And of course, because you couldn't figure out how it got there, it was just as mysterious. When you look at the world around you, there's no accounting for it. How the hell did it get here? And why? And where is it going to? And what's the reason for it all? These are questions that philosophers and mystics and religious people and even scientists have been dealing with for as long as people have asked questions, and there isn't any answer. And Kabbalah is an attempt to answer it, and the number 4 is where the answer can be found. So this whole story can be seen and understood as a picture. The one we're about to look at. It's on a piece of paper, just like the Tree of Life, but remember that both the picture that we're going to look at and the story that I just told you, they're just there to give the mind a way to grasp what it cannot experience directly. It's just a handy hook to hang things on. Obviously, the map is not the territory. I just gave you pretty intense vision or version of a really strange and unlikely process. And when you first hear something like that, the chances are that you don't even have time to formulate a question or think. But I'm going to ask you anyway, before I go on, if any of you have any questions or comments about what we were just talking about.
This is very close to looking at the patterns, very, very close to the sacred geometry and the flower of life.
Absolutely. There is, in what we're about to do, a very simple form of sacred geometry. And sacred geometry is, of course, the art of expressing the inexpressible by means of geometric patterns and mathematical relationships. And that's just about what we're going to do next. And what we're doing is describing the creative process by means of sacred geometry. Well, now it's time to do that. So take out your Four Worlds diagram, which I asked you to bring with you tonight. I hope you all have it. I'm going to assume so. I'm not even going to stop to ask if you don't have it, because if you don't, you're going to miss a whole bunch of stuff. So I want you to look at it. Just look at it. Just four circles. I mean, how simple can you get? Each circle, it's just about 3 inches in diameter, and each of these circles, there's four of them, and they overlap as they descend a vertical axis from the top of the page to the bottom, one underneath the other, underneath the other. And we're going to do with this diagram what we began to do with the Tree of Life in the first two lessons. We're going to give names to its parts, we're going to give attributions to its names, and we're going to create a linking architecture of concepts to hold all of it together and complete it. That's what we're about to do. And when we're done tonight, the second of the third essential numbers of Kabbalah will take its proper place in the mental structure that you're building right now in your mind. The real world, at least what we're used to calling the real world, the one that we're so attached to, will be almost visible. You'll know how all of this is connected to tarot, and your respect for tarot, I hope, will become even deeper than it already is. So let's begin to name and describe the four circles, which are the letters of the name, and the breaths which brought them into existence, and the circles that are the shape made by those breaths. First, there are the letters. They're the four letters of the Tetragrammaton. Anybody remember what they are, either in English or Hebrew?
I think I do.
Go ahead.
G, Y, H, VH?
Good, excellent. YHVH. Those are the English equivalents.
Yod Hey
Vav Hey.
Yod Hey Vav
Hey. There you go. Yod Hey Vav Hey is the Hebrew, and YHVH is the English. And of course, that combination of consonants with the necessary vowels put in the proper places produces the name Jehovah, which we're also familiar with, and which is, you know, a kind of an odd attribution of sounds to a name that is supposed to be unpronounceable. But in any case, yeah.
Hello,
uh-huh.
Martha.
Yeah.
And where do these four letters come from?
The Yod Hey Vav Hey, or that set of letters, comes straight out of Genesis, straight out of the Old Testament. And that's where it's first seen. And that particular set of letters can only be found there. That's its origin. Where they came from, who wrote the Old Testament, and who created this set of names, and why, that's beyond my scope of knowledge.
Okay, so how did you ask the questions that some people were able to identify with these?
Oh, well, the Tetragrammaton is the name.
What? I'm sorry?
This name is called in English the Tetragrammaton. It means the four letters.
Okay.
And the Tetragrammaton is such an integral part of Western magical process, of tarot, of Kabbalah, of ceremonial magic, and of all sorts of other things, that many people already know it without my having had to tell them. But we did go over it in earlier lessons, so I just wanted to know if you remembered.
I had never heard that.
Ah.
Tetra
is
it.
Yeah. I'll spell it for you.
Tetra.
Tetra is T-E-T-R-A.
Yeah, I got that.
And grammaton is G as in George, R A M M A T O N. And grammaton is essentially letters.
Tetragrammaton.
Yeah, the four letters, the four-letter name of God. Right. Okay. So, the first circle is the symbol of the utterance of the very first letter, and that letter is Yod, which is spelled, it's a word by itself, and it's spelled Y-O-D. So what I want you to do is I want you to write this word in the middle of the right-hand margin of the page, at the height of the top of the first circle. So you just want it to be in the right-hand margin at the top of the first circle, and I want you to write small, and I want you to write carefully because we're going to be writing quite a bit, and we don't want you to make it messy. You want it to be as neat as you can so you can understand it.
What are we writing? Yod?
Yod, Y-O-D, and right at the top of the first circle to the right in the right-hand margin. Now, about 2 inches below Yod, at the height of the top of the second circle, I want you to write the name of the second letter, which is He, spelled H-E-H. Below He, at the height of the top of the third circle, I'm going to write the name of the third letter, which is Vav, V-A-V. And then finally, below Vav, at the height of the top of the fourth circle, write H-E-H again. That's the final He. There are two of them in the name. Now, each letter of the Tetragrammaton has the essential nature of one of the four elements. Yod has the nature of fire. So I want you to write fire just below Yod. The first He has the nature of water. So write water just below the first He. Vav has the nature of air. So write air just below Vav. Everybody following me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the final He has the nature of earth. So write earth just below the second He. Okay. So now you know how the letters of the name are attributed to the first, the second, the third, and the fourth circles. The first, the second, the third, and the fourth breath. Each circle that we just gave a letter to is also a complete world and has its own name. Now, this is a little more complex. I'll give you the Hebrew name of each world first, and then its English translation. And I want you to write the Hebrew, then put a slash, and then write the English next to it. So you have a line with two words and a slash in between. The first world is Atzilut, spelled A, T as in Thomas, Z as in zebra, I, L-U-T-H. And I want you to write this directly below fire. A-T-Z-I-L-U-T-H, and it's pronounced Atzilut. The T-H is a hard T. Write this word directly below fire. Put a slash after it.
Is this the first one? Because
this is the first world. Put that right underneath the yod.
Okay. Atzilut.
Okay. And then, right after the slash, write emanation. E-M is in Mary, A-N is in Nancy, A-T-I-O-N. Now, emanation is not a literal translation. It's more like a functional approximate that gives the sense of the appropriate energy of the world. Literally, Atzilut means nearness, because it's very near to the origin of things. It's the very beginning of things. The second world is Bria, which is spelled B as in boy, R-I-A-H. Write this directly below water.
Could you spell that again, please?
B as in boy,
yeah.
R as in Robert, I, A, H as in Harry. Follow that with a slash, and the English translation is creation. Then there's the third world, and the third world is called Yetzira, and it's spelled Y, E, T, Z, I, R-A-H. Write this below air, under the third circle, and follow it with the English translation, which is formation. Okay. Now the fourth world is called Asiya. A-S-S-I-A-H. Write this directly below the word earth at the bottom of the diagram and follow it with a slash and the word substantiation. We're talking about filling things with substance. Now this is also a functional approximation. The literal translation of Asiya is making. Now finally, we haven't finished with our attributions yet. Finally, each world in Kabbalah is a suit in Tarot. It's not like a suit or connected with a suit or attributed to a suit. It is the suit. Or the suit is it. The suit is the world. Under Atzilut, write the word wands. Under Bria, write cups. Under Yetzirah, write swords. And under Asiya, write pentacles. I'm going to review those briefly. I'm going to give them to you as a straight description of one world at a time. The first world is Yod, fire, Atzilut, slash emanation, and wands. The second world, the second circle, is the letter He, the element water. The world is called Bria, and it means creation. And the suit is cups. The third circle is associated with the letter Vav, V-A-V, the element of air. The world is called Yetzirah. It means formation, and the suit is swords. And finally, there's He, the last He, which is earth, the world of Asiya, which we would approximately translate as substantiation, and the suit of pentacles. Those are the four worlds, their names and basic attributions. Now, together, this set of attributions, which we just did, makes just exactly one half of the word picture we're going to draw tonight of the mysteries of the number four, but they're only a tiny, tiny fraction of all there is. And if you tried to understand what you just wrote here, you would be lost. There's no way to understand from the word itself what fire is, nor what emanation, creation, formation, and substantiation are. You really don't know exactly how wands is connected with those things, other than the fact that perhaps in other times, by other teachers, in other situations, you've been told so. They're mysterious in themselves. They're simply one mystery added to another. And to really study these things would take a good, long chunk of your time. Does anybody here actually at this moment feel that they have a grip on this stuff? The way you would know that you understand something is to be able to teach it. Does anybody here think that you could explain or teach to somebody who is new why it was that the first world was called Yod, was associated with the element of fire, and what it is that fire means? What does it mean that the third world is called nearness, that it has the quality of emanation? And why are those things associated with the wand? Anybody feel they can do that? Shahrazad, how about you? Could you teach this stuff?
Well, on a very, very, very basic level.
Okay.
Beyond that.
Okay. You could probably list the same attributions I just did, but could you explain them? Could you explain them to yourself?
Yeah, I think I could explain the relationship of the wands and fire and emanation and explain it with the will and desire and that sort of thing.
Okay, we're going to get to that in just a couple of minutes. There is, what we just did was a series of attributions on the right-hand side of this diagram, and we're going to do the left-hand attributions in a couple of minutes. Before we actually do that, does anybody have any questions or comments on any of these things so far?
Yeah, I do. This is Linda, and I find it is odd that the last letter has different attributes, but it's the same letter.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
For the last world.
The reason for there being the same letter twice in the Tetragrammaton is actually an interesting one. I don't really want to get into it now. I have to bring this particular section of our class to an end, but I can tell you that therein lies an interesting mystery all of its own. You're right.
Okay.
You're right to notice that. Usually, we don't get into that unless we're studying Kabbalah, for its own sake, rather than in the context of tarot. So we'll leave it alone for now.
Okay.
Yeah, there are the mysteries of male and female, which we are going to just barely touch on. So, I could actually, if I wanted to, do the male and female of this thing right now, but I think we'll save it for what's coming up in a couple of minutes. Anyone else? No? Let me see. Gina, are you comfortable with all this? It's fairly simple and straightforward so far?
Oh, yes. I'm there.
Okay. Now, the interesting thing is that you will, you know, over the next few days and over the next few weeks and months and years and decades, you know, be playing around with tarot. You'll pick up a deck, you'll flip through it, you'll do readings, you'll, you know, study it in other contexts. And every time you do, you know, the minor arcana are going to flip out at you. And you're going to see the suits. One or another card of the suits are going to pop out at you. And you're going to realize, when you look at it now, that each one of the cards of the suits is an aspect of a breath uttered in order to create the world. And that in the creation, everything that happens in that world, all of its dramas, all of its details, all of its happenings, all of its forces and objects, are created with the utterance of a single breath. And then a breath again and again and again. And with four breaths, the world is created. A breath of fire, a breath of water, a breath of air, and a breath of earth. How simple. Well, we're going to just now go to the second half of this word picture. We're going to do the left-hand attributions in just a second.